Hello and welcome to P4A's Let's Talk Rare, a monthly podcast from Partners for Access.
Bringing you the most important news, trends and discoveries in the world of orphan drugs and cell and gene therapy.
Join me, Georgie Rack.
And me, Owen Bryant.
To analyse these developments and what they mean to you. Hello and welcome to the show. Today we'll be focusing on revolutionising patient outcomes and the power of digital health solutions with our special guest, RJ Kedziora. RJ is co-founder of Estenda Solutions, which is a leading company specialising in custom software and data analytics for healthcare and medical companies. With a remarkable journey spanning over 30 years, RJ possesses a deep understanding of designing, developing, and deploying successful software projects. His extensive experience enables him to provide valuable guidance and innovative insights, resulting in cost-effective solutions that improve patient outcomes. So welcome to the show, RJ. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. And if you could just briefly introduce yourself and give us a little bit of a background in healthcare.
I've been doing healthcare for about 20 years now. And as you mentioned, one of the two co-founders of Estenda Solutions, and we really focused on digital health over all those years. Prior to that, I got a degree in computer science and came up through the programming ranks. And very quickly over those years, realized programming and solution development, product development is much more than just technology. It's about understanding that patient journey and communicating with them. And communication is a two-way street. It's as much as what I say as listening to the patients, to the users of the software. And that's led to a lot of successful developments and deployments of various systems over the years. And in the last 20 years, focusing exclusively on healthcare has been an amazing journey because it's one where 20 years ago here in the US, medical record systems weren't very prevalent. With some of the chronic conditions and others, trying to get to data was difficult. Fast forward 20 years now, there's a plethora of data. And it's gone from a story of how do we develop solutions with limited information? How do we provide advice to the providers, care providers, nurses to do better for their patients and directly to the patients? How do we paint a better picture? So now when we have so much data, what is important? What's relevant? Because you can quickly get overwhelmed with the amount of data that's available today.
That's great. Thank you so much. So now, as you know, with our podcast, we always like to start with a quick fire round with our co-host, Owen Bryant. So over to you, Owen.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the show, RJ. Now, as Georgie said, we're going to ask you a few questions with either or answers. So let's get into it. Are you a town or countryside person?
If beach counts as country, I'm going to go with beach because I hang out on the beach a lot.
I think we can give you that. Yeah, definitely. I think that totally got to, hasn't it? Yeah. Okay, so countryside. What about dogs or cats?
Dogs, definitely.
Okay. Now, this next one is a controversial one. Do you like pineapple on pizza or no pineapple on pizza?
I'm going to have to say no pineapple on pizza.
Good, man.
To each their own.
Indeed, indeed. But I mean, pineapple on pizza is highly controversial. Right. You've just had it, but we're always interested in this from an Atlantic perspective. But are you a Thanksgiving person or a Christmas person?
I lean towards Thanksgiving. Just had the holiday here. And yes, definitely lean towards Thanksgiving.
What's so wonderful about Thanksgiving?
It's more about family. It's less about the presents, the gifts and everything like that. And the thanks is the focus of the event. The gathering is more what it's all about. So I tend to lean that way.
Love that. Great answer. Okay. Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve?
New Year's Eve.
And let's just say you finish a New Year's Eve and you're getting into an Uber. Would you prefer a chatty Uber driver or a quiet one?
I'm going to go quiet Uber driver.
Yeah. Relaxing vacation or an adventure holiday?
I used to go relaxing. I'm now much more in favor of the adventure and getting out there and seeing what I can see.
And let's just say we're on this adventure holiday. Would it be a skydive or a scuba dive?
I'd love to go skydiving, but yeah, scuba diving.
Okay, and you've had an amazing scuba diving experience. Would you tell your best friend on a text or on a call?
Call. They'll feel a little old school there. So yeah,
good man. Yeah, I love it, love it. And as you like to phone, are you an analog or digital person?
Oh, I'd have to say digital. My world focuses on just digital every day. So
absolutely. And finally, would you consider yourself an entrepreneur or an inventor?
I'm going to say inventor. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Of all those questions, I was like, okay, I could probably think about that for a while. I'm going to go inventor.
Yeah, I thought it might be a difficult one for you to answer because in a way you're both, you know, what you started and what you do, but also in what you're able to produce. So yeah, thank you so much, RJ. Appreciate the answers and the consideration there. Back to you, Georgie.
Thank you so much. They were really, really great answers. And I'm sorry, I have to agree. Pineapple on pizza is just a no. If you ask any of our Italian audience members what they think, I'm sure they'll agree. It's just an absolute no.
Each to their own, like you said, RJ, it's an important thing to live our lives by as well.
I think if you went to Italy and asked for pineapple on your pizza, they may eject you from the country.
Unless you're an Italian eating pineapple on a pizza, fair enough.
No. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for that. I really, really enjoyed it. So let's move on and start our podcast. So, RJ, what we'd like to touch on today is really looking at the current state of healthcare. What do you think are the current challenges in the healthcare system that really affect patient outcomes?
Access and equity are huge topics these days, which are an absolute challenge. My world is digital health. I think digital health can make a difference in terms of that access to equity. I think here in America, we have an obesity challenge. There's a mental health challenge, you know, and there's interplay between those things. There's not enough providers, care providers, medical professionals to take on those challenges. So if we can look to digital health to overcome those issues of access and equity, we have real opportunities.
Can I just ask as well quickly, when you say digital health, and I know this is a word and a phrase I see a lot, but what exactly is digital health?
Very broadly, it's the use of technology to provide care and treatment to patients with the care team as part of that picture, but also without them being present every day. In digital health, there's probably 300,000 applications out there. By some counts, maybe through 400,000, you know, digital health applications. But in the last few years, this idea of digital therapeutics has evolved, a very new term. And I think of the difference between vitamins and minerals that you might buy at the pharmacy versus a drug. And so while those vitamins and minerals do have some clinical evidence behind them, can make a difference, the drug has gone through a much more rigorous testing process, the clinical trials, approval by a regulatory body here in the U.S., such as the FDA. And they are designed to prevent, monitor, treat conditions. And that's the idea of a digital therapeutic. It's that drug. It's gone to an elevated status and really provide those capabilities to people to allow us to scale with the use of technology. I live in the greater Philadelphia area. There are a number of healthcare and mental health professionals, but you drive 3 hours from here into the middle of Pennsylvania and it gets very rural, very fast. It's harder to access, you know, those medical professionals. So, you know, digital health is all encompassing. It could just be as simple as telehealth in the middle of the Pennsylvania or middle of a rural area to be able to get a doctor online instead of having to travel somewhere is powerful.
It really is true that our digital world has shrunk our globe. The space is so much smaller now because of what the digital world has enabled us to enjoy. And just looking at your introduction, you say you've been in this role now for 30 years, in this field for 30 years. You must have seen so many changes in those 30 years. Wow.
Yeah, it's to be able to sit there and reflect on decades now as opposed to years and talk about decades. It has been amazing. The power of technology has improved. I got started doing mainframe programming and now everything is in the cloud. Like it's made a difference. And when I was introducing myself, I did talk to the idea of data. And that's a huge aspect of everything from understanding that patient condition. If you're going to your doctor and you're talking to your doctor, you're lucky if you have 10, 15 minutes and it's rushed and that physician has to get a lot of information out of you. It's really hard to do in that amount of time. Even from the patient perspective, you might go in saying, I want to hit these three bullet points, but that encounter with the doctor can be intimidating, can be hard. And so you might forget one of those points. If the doctor, the nurses that you talk to, the care professionals that you talk to might tell you three things, but again, you have a heightened sense of anxiety. So you walk out of there, it's like, okay, they told me this, but there was something else. What is it? But with that digital technology, to be able to email the provider to check into your patient portal and see the notes from that encounter adds a lot of value and has changed the world nowadays.
You mentioned digital health there. What types of digital health technologies are really addressing patients and are really helping with patient outcomes? Are there any kind of specific examples you can think of?
From the broad perspective, you look at things like telehealth. So just access to those doctors as probably the broadest category. COVID is, fortunately, if there's a small silver lining, I always hesitate to say that with COVID, but it has really helped promote the idea of telemedicine and gotten a lot more solutions out there. It's much more accepted on both sides from the healthcare professionals and the patient side. More specifically, as you drill down into chronic conditions or just understanding a patient's experience, if you have multiple sclerosis, you know, pain is a challenge. What is that patient's experience outside of that office visit? How can you help explain that to the healthcare provider? So as you look at those digital health solutions, you know, particularly mobile phone, you know, everybody tends to have a smartphone. You know, we're talking about access and equity, and not everybody has a smartphone just yet, but it's becoming more and more the standard. People might not have high-speed internet at home, but a lot of people are going to have that smartphone to be able to interact and capture that information and then share it with your provider. But if you look at things like diabetes and continuous glucose meters, instead of having to do a finger stick, which is painful and costly, then you'd go to a continuous glucose meter, and some of these devices are giving you a reading every 5 minutes. So you get a much better picture of what's going on within your body. You know, as your blood glucose goes up, you're not feeling that so much, but you are over time, your body is being damaged. So the better you control that in the moment, the better off you're going to be. But then as we look at individual patients, that aspect of collecting data and understanding the picture even goes to populations, social determinants of health. There's so much information out there that, you know, we can learn from other industries. The consumer mass marketing industry, you know, you walk into a store nowadays, they know so much about you. You know, there are privacy considerations. Don't get me wrong. There are privacy considerations. But why shouldn't your healthcare providers have that similar picture to better understand your journey, your challenges? Look at the patient's perspective and the social determinants of health. You know, where do you live? Is it a food desert? You know, can you easily get to a store that has fruits and vegetables? The idea of food is medicine. You know, I strongly believe in that. If you can eat more fruits and vegetables versus ultra processed foods, you're going to be better off. But if there's not a grocery store near you, that's a challenge.
And how important is patient engagement in achieving these better outcomes?
It's extremely important. And it's one of those challenges in healthcare these days. And in the US, there's, I would say, less personal accountability these days on the individual patient. So that's one of those things I'd love to see change. The more you can engage the patient in the use of that technology to get the benefit of those solutions, the better off you're going to be. There's this idea, if you're being watched, you're going to do better. So if you're using one of these digital health applications that are available and that information is being shared with your doctor, you're more likely to be compliant and be engaged. And there's this idea of gamification, and it is a valid idea. I think of it more as engagement. It's like, okay, how do we keep that patient engaged in their care journey? The better off, it's a lot of conditions, the better you take care of yourself, the better you eat, the more you move. I try and say exercise. A lot of people are like, exercise, the more you exercise. Exercise is important, but it's just movement. You know, just throughout your daily day, if you can get up and walk, you know, I sit at a desk an awful lot, but you get up and you walk, you know, every hour kind of thing. And it doesn't have to be a mile, the better off you're going to be. You know, just park a little further away or take the steps instead of the escalator. They make a difference.
Small choices. Are they easy to use apps? When you're developing these apps for patients, what do you need to think about to make sure that it's easy to use for all different types of patients that might be utilizing that app, for example? Because sometimes carers are using that app on behalf of their children. Lots of different stakeholders may utilize that app. Is it easy for different generations?
Yeah, you mentioned the word stakeholders, and that's a huge, huge aspect of it. You know, my background is technology, and it's interesting because there's various movements in the industry. It's, you know, security first, privacy first. You got to consider these things. But all of these things come around to the idea of empathy, of the more you can understand the users of the system, that patient, the providers, the people that are using it and getting their feedback earlier in the process, the better off you're going to be. You know, so you have to consider who are your stakeholders. You mentioned kids versus adults. It even sort of flips now as the general population gets older and older kind of thing. You know, those of middle age are becoming caregivers for their parents. And how does that technology interplay work? You know, it's like, okay, my mother might be using an Apple Watch, but what does that mean to her? And is that an effective technical solution for her versus some of the passive technologies that are out there for growing ideas, care at home, instead of moving an elderly person, you know, someone that can take care of themselves into a separate facility where they're not going to be happy. You're removing them from their home that they might have been there for 30, 40 years. You know, let them stay at home, but provide that support where you can put a sensor on the refrigerator or the bed to know that they got out of bed in the morning, that they went to the refrigerator, so they probably ate some breakfast. And get very passively, you know, you don't even have to use cameras, you know, because cameras have privacy implications. They might be, you know, invasive. But if there's just that passive sensor, it's like, okay, I turned the coffee on. Okay, they're up, they're moving around. We know they're doing well today. So yeah, in thinking of that patient and their experience is probably first and foremost, as we develop new solutions, they have to be considered as part of that. And I have had the experience of working with patients over the years, and I am very fortunate to be healthy and not have any major conditions myself. And so being able to sit in on patient appointments and understand a patient's perspective and having that empathy for them and understanding what they go through helps develop that better solution. Sometimes it's as simple as colors on a screen, thinking of color blindness. It's like, okay, how are we going to make sure that this is understood? Individuals, it's cultures. You know, different colors have different meanings to different cultures. So who are you developing for and really considering those things in the process?
Sounds like a huge, huge amount of work goes into developing these digital health technologies. How long does it roughly take? Say, for instance, I don't know, a digital health tool for diabetes. How long would that planning, development, and actually rolling that out take? Is it different per disease area, or is there a kind of a rough time zone?
Yeah, it's a great question. In my travels and I meet people and talk to people, I get that question. And then the next follow-on question is, how much does it cost? And I always think about, you know, okay, you just asked me to build a house. How many bedrooms do you want in that house? Do you want 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms? How many bathrooms? Do you want a basement? The kitchen? What are your styles? You know, what types of cabinets do you want? Do you want simple moldings or crown moldings? You know, all of those things go into it. So it does take time to develop these solutions because you want to be considerate. You need to get that patient input into it. The way I think about it is you need to generate value quickly and reduce risk, those two things. And as I think about it, an analogy that comes to mind is you have a problem and you're traveling across the city. You know, it's like you need to get to school, you need to get to work. Oh, I have this great idea for a car. And that car is solution X for, you know, whatever condition a patient might have. It's going to take a while to get there, to be able to build that car. So let's first build a skateboard. I've created value very quickly. I can now give that to the patient, to myself. I can get across town much more quickly. I'm learning very quickly. And by gaining that feedback and learning, I'm reducing risk. I'm learning stuff along the way. And then, okay, it's not the most stable thing. Let's add, like, make it into a scooter and add a handlebar to it. Okay, it's a little more stable. Well, now let's add, you know, a simple motor to it. Okay, well, now it's raining. I get wet. Okay, let's put a cover. And then you get to that car gradually over time. And as you go, you're adding value and reducing risk. Instead of a project taking a year and, you know, at the end, like, hey, here you go. It's like, did I really build the right house for you if I didn't talk to you along the way? Probably not.
It's putting in those bite-sized bits of success. And my dad always said to me, success by the inch is a cinch, but success by the yard is hard. So breaking them up and getting them, because sometimes I look at these apps and think, God, the development must be so hard. How did they develop these things? But I'm looking at someone with a finished product, and there's so many stages that you usually take to get there. It's fascinating to hear your process and how you work. Another thing that I'm really interested in is conduit that we use, the technology that interfaces between us and the data. And you mentioned earlier that smartphones are something that, you know, everyone pretty much has a smartphone now. So that is something that we can really anchor. What about other emerging technologies, things like smartwatches or other things like that? What do you see as playing a really major role in the future of digital health?
It's a movement from active technology to passive technology, I think, is the big change that we're going to start to see, that it becomes easier to access this information, to share this information, and then to process the data. So, you know, as I've been doing this for 20 years, I wore some early heart rate monitors, which had multiple wires that connected to different parts of my body to be able to get that signal. And now I wear a ring. And it tracks my heart rate and my sleep and everything like that. And it's just another piece of jewelry that I wear. And I don't think about it anymore. It's just there. I do happen to be a triathlete. So it's, you know, capturing all sorts of that data helps my performance. But in terms of disease conditions and understanding a person's experience, as that data capture methodology can fade into the background and it becomes less obvious, one, it allows us to capture more data, but two, to create that more comprehensive picture. And the second half of that is, once you have that data, you need to be able to process it. What are the salient points? How do I provide meaningful information, advice to that patient, to a provider, to make an impact at that right time? You know, we were talking about engagement. Okay, where is that right point to engage with the patient? One of the things, we were part of a project 15 years ago, before personal health records were a thing, where I was with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we were envisioning what a personal health record could be and what could you do with this data. And just in the world of diabetes, you're experiencing low blood sugar, and, you know, it's low blood glucose. You need to take care of that immediately. So you're driving down the road, you pull off, and there's a McDonald's in front of you. Well, there's a point of engagement. There's some bad things you can eat, some not so good things, some better food choices. So there's a point of engagement with the technology that, you know, you can be able to use to help that patient make better decisions. And then to process all the data there, you know, everyone's obviously talking about AI these days. How can we apply the AI technology to these solutions? And we're not there yet, but it's, you know, advancing down the road, as opposed to having to look at your smartphone or a glucose meter, you know, your CGM device to understand what's happening. It's, your car can go ding and then tell you. It's like, hey, you're experiencing low blood sugar, low glucose. You need to do something about this. And hey, half a mile down the road is a restaurant. You can grab your 7-Eleven, something you can, you know, grab to eat and help yourself.
It's incredible, really. When you listen to it, just the future where it's going really, really is incredible for patients. Just to finish off, really, what advice do you have for healthcare professionals looking to embrace innovation for better patient outcomes? How can they stay updated on the latest advancements in the healthcare technology? Obviously, it's an ever-evolving space. It's moving very quickly. Like you say, with the rise of AI technologies and digital health, how can they really stay updated? I think was the first question. And then what advice do you have for healthcare professionals looking to embrace innovation for their patients and better outcomes?
It is definitely challenging. I would sort of flip that question and the challenge to the technical community. You know, how can we make it easier for the healthcare professionals to learn about these solutions and technology? I was just at the American Heart Association scientific sessions, and there was an area just very startup focused. So, you know, if you are at one of those conferences and stuff, you can walk around and engage with those companies to learn about what tools and technologies are out there. But there are, just like every physician, nurse, you know, healthcare professional follows the medical side of the journals and newsletters and things that they pay attention to. These days, it's equally important to stay and pay attention to that technology side. And it should really start in school, as their EMRs are a relatively new thing here in the US, and they're being accepted more and more, because as more people come through medical school, and that's just part of their journey, you know, that they have access to the smartphones, to the AI technologies, that as they learn with these, then they become embedded in part of the way they practice. So I think first I would turn it around and say, okay, the technology community has to continually look for opportunities to educate those professionals. And the sooner the professional societies, the organizations can incorporate those ideas of technology into learning and use, you know, the better off everyone will be.
And the bit of advice that you'd give someone venturing out into the healthcare world as a freshly graduate, what advice would you give them?
Technology is not about technology. It's about the people, the process, the communication. First and foremost, you can be the most brilliant software developer, but if you cannot communicate and understand, have empathy for the users of your software, you're just not going to be successful. So understand that. Technology, it's important. You do have to understand how to do software development and code and build a secure solution. They are all very important, but understanding that patient first is how you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, all those ways from Apothecaries to where we are now, it's still empathy is the most important thing to understanding and treating a patient. Is there anything you're exciting in work? I know you can't give too much away about who you're working with, what you do, but is there anything really exciting you're working on at the moment? What's your pet project? What's happening?
That's one of my interesting challenges. We sign a lot of NDAs and work with companies on the innovation side. One of your quiz questions was entrepreneur versus innovators. And a lot of our projects are very early on where someone doesn't quite know what they want. We're exploring and figuring that out to be able to do that. Like many people, the idea of the ChatGPTs, the generative AI, we're really, you know, starting to push down those roads and understand how to apply that and make use of it. And it's not so much what's capable today. While it's amazing what it's capable of today, it's what it's going to be capable of 2 years from now. Bill Gates said it, you know, humanity in general tends to overestimate what's possible in a 2 year time zone, but underestimates what's possible in that 10-year horizon. You know, so think about what you think is possible today. We probably don't know what is coming 10 years from down the road. And, you know, as I think about my 20-year journey with the Stenda app, the iPhone didn't exist. You know, it just wasn't a thing. And now it's part of daily life and so much of what we do. The world has changed.
It certainly has. It certainly has. And hopefully a lot of things for the better. What you're doing is, I think, illuminating and spreading knowledge, which is the thing that's powerful. The most powerful thing we can have is knowledge. So yeah, it's been a real privilege to have you on the podcast today, RJ. Thank you so much. Georgie, any last bits to add?
Very, very engaging. It's been a pleasure to meet you. Really, really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Sounds good. This was great. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, RJ. Have a great day. Speak soon. Take care.
Bye.
E4A, Let's Talk Rare. It's brought to you by Partners for Access. To find out more about Partners for Access and our commitment to sustainable orphan drug and cell and gene therapy access, please visit our website, www.partnersforaccess.com. Make sure you search for Let's Talk Rare in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Partners for Access, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.